Welcome, friends, to a new episode of the Soul Kitchen podcast. Today, I'm sitting with a very special guest that has been recommended to me by Lydia Lins. And Lydia has been one of my former guests. Her episode has actually been the one that has been most listened to, fascinatingly.
Oh, wow.
But today, I'm meeting with Greg Papagna, who is a music producer, a visual artist, and an entrepreneur. He has launched an app called Science on the intersection of music and well-being. And today we're going to learn about his life, how he ended up playing these roles, about his new app, about how he combines music with wellness. And I'm very excited to meet you today, Greg. How's your day going so far?
It's a great day so far. It's a stunning day.
I heard you have a friend that is going to the airport. What's happening?
A friend going to the airport, producing her record. She's a friend, but also a music collaborator. So she came in to record some parts on her songs. Mm. So we were in the studio and recording some vocals mainly. And she's flying out today.
I see on your Instagram that you have many collaborations going on. How do these people appear in your life?
They literally just appear. I feel like we attract what we put out. So in many ways, it's how I met Lydia, through another friend. He just called me one day, said, "Hey, you and Lydia should meet. She's recording an album. She needs a producer." And then that's how we met. And my other friend now, actually, I'm friends with her mother, who I met at Ecstatic Dance. And her mom's just so cool. We just became friends, and then I ended up meeting Jade, who's my friend. And then Jade's an amazing musician, so she was looking for a producer, and they're producing her record. So
what you put out is also what you attract. And do you have a certain idea about the people that you like to collaborate with, or is it more they come in your life and intuitively you say yes or no?
Yeah, exactly. And usually whoever comes in is a yes, I'd say. 99% of the time, they don't really arrive unless it's supposed to be, a lesson of some sort. But the way I work is spirit minded. I only work in 432 hertz or 444 hertz musical tuning, so I don't work in standard 440 tuning. And so these artists are looking to collaborate with someone who can work at a very high level. Technically and musically, who's work in the mainstream music industry and have for just over 20 years. So I can bring all that experience, but I'm also bringing that depth and that connection to the earth and connection to spirit. I've been on all the retreats. I've done all the psychedelics. Maybe not all of them, a bunch. and they have as well. And they're looking to be guided, be collaborating with and create with someone who can understand them on different levels of consciousness where they might not find that with every other producer. Hmm.
So I'm curious, because you say you work spirit-minded and you mentioned 432 hertz. And I know very little about music. Yeah. My brother is a musician, my father is a musician, but yeah. I know very little about it. So how would you explain this to someone that knows very little about music? What is that?
Sure. So instruments are tuned. The standard tuning for an instrument is on the 440 hertz scale, which was something that was standardized in the early 1900s to try to help instrument manufacturers and just help people in general to tune their instruments on the same scale so they can play together. So if you tune to 440 and I tune to 432, it's going to sound a bit off, right? The pitch is not going to match. So this standardization was made. But prior to that time, orchestras tuned to all different types of tunings. Most of them were under 440 hertz. Some were at 432. Some were at 438. They were all kind of different. Oftentimes, it was based on the harpsichord that was available. We're talking hundreds of years ago. at that harpsichord may have its own natural resonance or tuning that it falls mostly in line with based on the craftsperson that, that made it. So then the orchestras or musicians would then tune to that. So now if we go back further, we see in ancient civilizations that a lot of tuning was at 432 hertz. And if we measure the resonant frequencies of dolmens, mounds, pyramids, and ancient structures like that, the resonance of those structures oftentimes falls on the 432 hertz tuning scale. So it's going back to your question. Mm-hmm. It is a tuning scale at to which an instrument is aligned and tuned to, a guitar, a piano, etc.
Yeah. And why is it that then in mainstream maybe people don't use this tuning scale, or what?
Well, they're in 440, and because that became the standard probably about 100 years ago, and then some people are tuning into 432 or tuning into 444 or 528, or even there's many other tunings, Pythagorean tuning, there's all kinds of microtonal music, and there's so many different types of tunings. It's very niche at the moment. So there's people that do it, but not a lot. It just takes it's an extra step. Also, some people just are not aware of the possibility. And so people like me and others out there can open them to the possibility of something new, something different. And in the case of 432, it aligns with sacred geometry and mathematics. So the people that want to see the science, they want to see the numbers on paper, it hammers out the facts and the relation to the tuning and to ancient structures, to the body, to the brain, to the hemispheres of the brain, to the spine in the body, to patterns in nature, looking at plants, animals, trees. And that all breaks down to these sacred geometric figures and mathematics.
And for someone listening to this 432, what are kind of the benefits for the listener?
Yeah, harmony. We're listening to a frequency that creates a vibrational geometric structure of harmony and alignment. So if we place ourselves in a space and then receiving that frequency, then our body and our cells and our energy field is receiving harmony and giving it a place to attune and to align.
Because I listened to some of your music, and it's harmony, I feel, relaxation, and a certain peace of mind, you know, like the moment, you're in the moment,
yeah,
and that life is okay kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if you look at your new app, Science, can you share a little bit about it, and is it related to this tuning?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so Science, S-I-N-E-S, mm-hmm. like what music is comprised of, mostly sine waves. And it's also a town in Portugal.
A town in Portugal, yeah.
Yes, no, in the know. South. Yeah. Very beautiful. So there's some ancient mystical ties to the name. But yes, the app, all the music that I composed, me and some friends of mine composed for the app, it's all in these tunings. And all the music is related to mood states. So when designing this and creating this music, the music came first before the app came into consciousness. And it was about relating brainwave states to mood states, relating that to chakras and energy centers of the body, relating that to activities we're involved in throughout the day. So in the app, I split this into 10 mood states. People know how they feel and how they want to feel most of the time. So it's easy. It's very turnkey just to push the button if you need sleep, if you need balance, if you need focus, if you need energy. And we also have guided meditations that are backed by these frequencies as well. So I'm taking everything I studied in metaphysics and everything I studied in science and putting it together in these compositions. And so the depth of effectiveness is palpable.
So based on the mood where you're in, or is it the mood that you want?
That you want.
So it's a desired state.
Desired state.
And then you, let's say I request it. Is it like a certain length, the music, or it varies? Or?
They vary, yeah. So they're in playlists. It's laid out like any kind of music player, like Spotify or Apple Music. And there are many, many hours of music for each mood state.
Yeah.
And we're, yeah, always adding new music.
And what's the... what users do you have in mind, or do you already have, and when would they use it?
Yeah, it's really for anyone. I mean, there's children, there's infants listening to this. Of course, they probably don't have their own phone, but parents playing it for their newborns. My music's played for people giving birth and people being birthed into another world, wow. Transitioning.
Yeah,
and I hear messages like that all the time. And everywhere in between. So this can be for anyone who needs some support in alignment.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically you use music as a tool, for helping people to arrive in certain moods.
Yeah.
And of course you can look in Spotify yourself, but you're kind of guiding them because you have connected it to the desired moods.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's more turnkey. You also, you know exactly what you're getting. On some of the larger platforms, there's wonderful amounts of music. There's wonderful music. There's even music that has healing properties. But it's hard to know. It's hard to find. Sometimes there's things labeled certain ways, and it's not actually that. People are labeling it for marketing purposes. So, yeah, I've created this platform because I really want people to have the access and the true depth of effectiveness. So it really makes a difference if you want to spend, if they just have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes to play something, it really can help.
Yeah. Beautiful. And how do people get to know the app? I mean, of course there's different marketing tactics, but in your case, how do people get to know it?
Well, there's been a lot of word of mouth, through the different teachers and guides that I have on the app for the guided material. So they're always sharing it. There's a lot of healers, energy workers, and practitioners of all types that have, even before the app, always use my music. They love to play it, and it helps their work in their sessions. So now with the app, then they're available. They're sharing that with their clientele. So I think just like the music, it's been a very organic approach. And we, of course, are implementing some marketing things, and we'll grow that as we go.
Yeah. And is it always your music, or do you also curate music of other people?
So far, it's always mine or music that I've co-written with friends who understand, based on us working together, how we create this music with these specific properties in mind. Everything is intentional, from the instruments being used, from the nature sounds we record all over the world, the tempo, the arrangement, the textures, it all matters. And there's different patterns and techniques that I discovered along the way that we start to use that make a real difference in what we're creating versus what may be found elsewhere. There's a real intentionality to it. So, yeah. That's the importance of it, not to just curate content.
Yeah. And how do you, because you're also a visual artist, like how do you combine music and visual artists to achieve your missions or your purpose?
Yeah, so the visual art's another way to balance the brain and the body. So I work with EMDR layers, and I put those inside the visuals. So it's a visual way to stimulate the brain and balance the brain hemispheres. So then you can put that together with the music or binaural frequencies. Now you're getting an audio and visual experience, which is making it even stronger. And EMDR has been around a long time. It's very effective, but it's really very like institutional. Mm-hmm. It's also very niche. And usually it's a green dot on a black screen moving side to side, and you look at it, and over a period of time it synchronizes the brain hemispheres. So I felt like, why not make it like art?
Yeah.
Let's put this in art. So if someone is looking at this, it's a beautiful piece of art. Mm. Or if we want to put it on a wall somewhere, it's a beautiful piece of art. But it's doing something in the space. It's doing something for people in the space who approach it and take that into their eyes.
So you combine music, visual art, and therapy.
Yeah.
So that seems quite like a quite fresh approach. And when you hear music, how do you come up with this visual art? Is that very intuitive, or there are certain connections you make between music and art, or
it's very intuitive. I'm just painting digitally, and it's whatever. It's like how I create the music too. It's whatever I'm told, whatever comes to me, and then I'm doing that, and then I'm taking, of course, the EMDR from the traditional sense, moving stimuli on the screen at different brainwave states, putting that as subliminal layers underneath the art. And I have some of the art is very obvious that it's EMDR and it's moving across the screen in this way, but I've changed the color so it doesn't look so institutional to me. And and then I'm taking that in myself. I'm seeing, okay, how does this make me feel? Mm. Is this hitting the mark for what it's intended to do?
So you test how you feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And can you always create, or it comes in waves, or how do you prepare for creativity?
I'm creating every day. It's what I do. It's why I'm incarnated in this semi-solidified perspective called human experience. It's like breathing for me. Mm. Yeah.
And it's something you just sit and you can create, or do you have certain rituals that you first go for a walk, or you're in nature, or you take a...
It's just immediate.
Cup of tea.
It's immediate. I mean, of course, I have daily practices of getting up in the morning and doing some kind of movement, workout, yoga, jump in the ocean, you know, that kind of thing. Eat a certain breakfast or something, but... And then it's time to I'm in the studio, 12 to 14 hours, 12 hours minimum every day I'm in the studio.
Wow, you're disciplined.
Yeah.
You take some time off sometimes?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes just a few hours, half a day, go meet with some friends, walk in some nature. Of course, I travel here and there, but I'm not a big, like, lay back on the lounge chair on the beach kind of person. I feel like my life is almost a vacation.
Because you love what you're doing.
I'm loving what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's a blessing.
Amazing. So I'm curious. I scrolled through your Instagram and I saw like a sentence. You said, good luck with the roles you're playing. You said it to some people or to your followers.
Yeah.
So how have you ended up in your roles? You know, at this moment, maybe music producer, visual artist, entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Can you share a bit about the path towards those roles?
Sure, of course. Well, I feel like with all of us, the roles that we play, who we are in life and our passions, our proclivity to what we are doing and what we want to do, they've always been there. I feel like we're just uncovering, and sometimes it takes some of us longer than others to uncover those layers, to give ourselves permission, if you will, to do these things in life. And so I've always been involved in music. I've always been fascinated with literature. I've always been fascinated with art, and I've always been fascinated with spirituality and all these things. So over time, with the process of refining, okay, who am I and why am I here? What is my expression to the world? It took a long time, but these different pillars that you mentioned, they just start to get more in focus, more until I could see the shape and the structure of these. And I said, I know exactly what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And then once you know that, you just have to do it.
Yeah. So it's uncovering who you already are, or unpacking.
Yeah.
So have you had a moment in your life where you played a role and then found out this is not the role I have to play?
Of course.
Can you give an example?
Of course. Sure. Of course. I mean, I think we do it in relationships of all types. We could do it in creativity, and we can do it in work. So I've definitely found myself in personal relationships feeling like that, like, what am I doing? What is this? This isn't it. Okay.
The wrong relationship.
This is a wrong role. Yeah. Wrong scene.
Yeah.
Hold on. But like at the same time, not because then you learn from it. Right. Yeah. But then you realize, all right, this is not to go on any longer.
Yeah.
And same thing can be with work or career, creative things. Maybe found myself doing certain type of work in the industry, in music, in sound in general, and felt like, this isn't it. Like, I don't like this part of it right now. And then you have to re-navigate. And then it's finding also your truth in it. And I quit the music industry for 6 years because I was bored. I was confused with what are we doing? Hmm. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe that, and like in hindsight, sometimes it feels like, gosh, that seems like so negative, but like, that's just how I operate. Like, I'm like, what are we doing and why? I can't just like, woo, all right, it's a party. And sometimes like, that's great. Like we should definitely be having fun, but I'm always looking at why, what am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
So.
How old were you when you quit the music industry?
27. Yeah.
27. And then what happened in those 6 years?
Spiritual journey. Yeah. I was still mixing sound. I was working a lot of television and film, just mixing sound. And I didn't love that work, but I learned a lot from that work. And I worked on tons of shows and films. And then music started to call me back after I did all this spiritual work, psychedelic work, psychological work of all types. And then it was calling me back, and I fought it for a while. I was like, nah, this can't be. No. And then I wanted it. But then when I got back into it, it was my way. It was in the tuning I wanted. It was in the expression that I want. Hmm. It was not like I felt like I had to do something to fit a role or to fit popularity.
No.
Which I wasn't really into. So it was confused in the early stages when I was in music, because it was sort of incongruent. Like I didn't really like the music I was working on.
So if you look back at that 6 year spiritual journey, psychedelic work, I assume maybe you're still doing certain things. But what has been the essence of, let's say, what you learned from that 6 year period?
Wow.
It's so, as a podcast,
yeah.
Always nice you can ask the question.
No, it's great. No, there's just like so much. There's just so many layers to it. Yeah, you just learn more and more who you are, and I got more and more comfortable with who I am, even in the face of people who may not understand that. Instead of shrinking to that, you just show up and say, "This is me. This is my expression." And when their eyes kind of spin. Okay. They're either going to hang around and they might learn something. It might expand their perception or their consciousness, or they might fade away because it's incongruent. It doesn't make sense. So being extremely comfortable and being in my truth, that was probably the biggest. And shedding off a lot of layers of insecurity and fear. And of course, there was all kinds of things to solve with just how I relate to people, how I relate to family, and how I relate to myself.
So standing in your truth more and more, because I saw a short video on your Instagram. I think it was in collaboration with Sifra or something like that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, our platform.
And I think you mentioned that happiness is when people are living their truth, right? Or standing in their truth. So can you elaborate on that statement?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's just that. It's when you can show up and be authentically you, there's like nothing lingering in the background that says, oh, I wish I was doing XYZ. And like, there's nothing you're feeling bad about that you're missing out on, because you are fully playing your role that you came here to play and expressing the truth of yourself. And that's it. And I think everyone wants to be seen, heard, and expressed in some way. And we all have a unique way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, there's no lingering feelings or the idea that you're hiding.
Exactly.
And you mentioned the word incongruent.
Yeah.
Right. So that maybe some people fade away when it's incongruent. Like, why did you pick that word? So what does incongruence mean to you?
So it doesn't match, doesn't align any longer. It's
it does.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's just not. It's just not in alignment any longer. There's nothing else for each person to learn in the situation, and so then the situation or relationship may not continue.
Yeah, it may not continue.
Yeah.
And what I also find fascinating, because you mentioned 6 years, so that implicitly, then I expect that there's a certain end date, right? So is there a certain end date when that 6 years ended, or 6 years more rough estimation, or what? How does that work?
Like a date on the calendar, or like
or an event, or implicitly,
it was a sort of fade in, if you will. I mean, it was like anything. It just, there's inklings of it. It starts to fade in. Hmm. Now you have me thinking about the numbers. I'm always with 3, 6, and 9. So 27, 7, 2 is 9. That's 3, 3, 3. That's 3, 6, and 9. And 6 years later is 33. That makes sense for me.
Yeah.
I do everything in 3, 6, 9. So that makes a ton of sense.
At some point it felt that phase was finished and you came into a new phase.
Yeah. Totally.
Talking about phases, I'm always interested in people's geographical movements and histories. So can you share a little bit about your life and your geographical movements?
Sure, like places I've lived.
Yeah, maybe where you were born, where you've lived, why you live in Portugal now, geographical movements.
Of course. Well, again, I go to the numbers. I traverse parallels and ley lines. So I was born in New Jersey, 39th parallel, where I live in Portugal. I'm on the 39th parallel.
Oh.
So LA is on the 33rd. So I seem to hop around these parallels, and they're energy centers on this planet, in this hologram that we're in, that I commune with and I align with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. You're the first person that I'm meeting that is sharing it in that way with the numbers. And so you've lived in Los Angeles. So I'm curious, what did Los Angeles bring you and what does Portugal bring you?
Well, Los Angeles brought me community, brought me the music industry, entertainment industry. It's a total vortex of creativity, a vortex of everything. I think in LA you could be anyone you want, anything you want, any collection of things you want, and you will find a community for it. From plant medicine to art, it's there. You will not be alone. That's how I feel about it. Hmm. And I think it's a very unique place in this realm. So unique. I really don't know of another place that is so accepting and so prolific in those ways of the matrix mainstream all the way to the deep spiritual feet in the earth and it weaving all together. So it's like a really beautiful duality there. And Portugal brings me nature and abundance in land energy and the crystalline quartz granite land. It's a beautiful connection to ancient civilizations. Brings me peace and clarity and things I wanted away from LA. Those things may be lacking in LA.
Peace, clarity, nature.
Yeah.
Some things that you couldn't find there or didn't find there.
Yeah.
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 Beautiful. Yeah. I always, I've never lived in Los Angeles. I've been there once, but I always have this idea that there's a lot of, you know, creativity and people following their hearts.
Absolutely.
There's probably also a downside, but it also has some magnetic.
It's a total magnet. Yeah.
Would you ever go back, or do you feel once you leave, you don't want to go back because it's like your path?
Well, I'm going to go back for projects, but I wouldn't live there full time.
No,
I don't really see that. It's a scene I already played in the movie.
Yeah. I have the same with Amsterdam. It feels like I already know that movie.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So I wouldn't go back too soon. So in your career, you've worked with some big brand names like Snoop Dogg and Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
How did you end up working with these people, and how has it been looking back?
Yeah. Well, Snoop Dogg, I met in a studio I was an assistant at, and he came in one night, and they didn't have a sound engineer to really run the session. Actually, there was another assistant there, and he was sort of running the session. I was helping him. I was already very fast in the studio, just with the gear, with the software. I had been doing this for already a number of years myself, like just in the basement at home. I think they got frustrated with the other guy. They kicked him out of the studio. They put me up at the console. I was like, let's go. And I can move very fast. They like that. They want to be able to, an idea comes through, they want to record it right away. And I get that. I understand when the channel is open, the muse is in the room, we need to capture that. So I did that, and then they were at the studio many more days. Okay, they invited me back. They wanted me on the session. There was a wonderful producer there named Terrace Martin, who's an amazing jazz musician and producer. He produced a lot of the Kendrick Lamar records. And he liked me as well. And so after that, he would do a lot of Snoop Dogg sessions, so he would always invite me to be his engineer on the sessions. So we did many, many sessions for a number of years, and then he'd invite me to other sessions he was doing for other artists. And then that's how we ended up doing the Amy Winehouse sessions together. That was actually something with Snoop Dogg as well, was involved in that. I don't know where those records are. They didn't come out. So.
And what did it do with your self-confidence or career once you work with Snoop Dogg?
It's wonderful for the resume, of course, and you meet people, like you meet other producers and other artists when being in these studios, because we're in public studios, well-known studios, a record plant, Chalice Studios, the Village, etc. All these studios in LA where there's other artists, other producers in the other rooms, so you cross paths with people while being in there, and then you get hired on other session. So it's great to network. It's wonderful to learn. I learned a lot from the other producers that I work with there, like Teddy Riley, not through Snoop Dogg, but I ended up working with Scott Storch, who's another incredible hip hop R&B producer. I just learned a lot from being an engineer in the room and watching these guys who are incredible musicians, incredible at their craft. And then I able to implement those things in my craft when I started producing.
And I'm curious. It seems like you're very passionate and intrinsically motivated, right? That's how you came into these places. But what did you learn from someone like Snoop Dogg or Amy Winehouse, that, like, in their craft, that you're like felt inspired by or learned something from?
Snoop Dogg's always, to me, is the ultimate pillar of self-truth. Living, he's being himself all the time. He doesn't care what anyone else is thinking. He's going to show up authentically as him, no matter what. And then I love that. I think he's just like stands for that in the world, and he talks about it. And it's incredible. And that's why when you look at someone like that, he's just so in his truth. He's like, it's unmistakable who you're looking at. You can't confuse him with anyone else. He's one of one. He's unique. And I also learned about work ethic. And I already had the work ethic, but to be around people who had the same work ethic, like, doesn't matter what it takes. He was sleep there on the couch. We'd all sleep at the studio sometimes for days. It didn't matter. It was whatever it took to get the work done. And Amy, I didn't, I spent a few sessions with her, And I thought she was just interesting. Well, I don't know that we really communicated a whole lot. There was a lot of other people in the room and involved, other producers and stuff. And I didn't even know who she was at the time. This was like really right before the stuff really broke big in the U.S. I think other people in the room knew who she was. I just thought she had a cool hairdo, and but every day was the same hair, the beehive hairdo, and the Daisy Duke shorts. So I was like, and the makeup, and I was like, interesting. So I had no idea who she was at the time. I just thought she was interesting, and of course, voice was incredible, and she was thought it was interesting how she wrote music.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's fascinating that you've had these experience. And what resonates me is the self-truth with Snoop Dogg. Sometimes you meet people and you're like, oh, they're so in their truth, and it's magnetic, right?
Yeah.
I think it's still a practice every day for me. If you look at your own life, what really helped you to stand more and more in your truth? I mean, we already discussed this six-year journey, but has there been a moment or a teacher or a lesson when you're like, I learned a lot about truth?
I feel like it's been a continuous process, and being willing to hold myself accountable and hold the mirror on myself and ask myself, is this me? Is this my truth? And constantly checking myself on that and refining. I feel like when you're a kind of a people pleaser person, or you want everyone else to feel great and everything to be okay, and that's the kind of person I have been. You can compromise your truth for that. You don't want to ruffle any feathers in any situation. But as you get a bit older, you realize like, fuck it. There's no time like for this anymore. Like the time's ticking.
Yeah.
And so things click for me where I was like, all right, I'm just letting it all out. I don't care what happens.
No.
If I die doing it, so what?
Yeah.
Because it's worse to hold it. It's terrible to hold it in.
For me, the process of self-truth, the podcasting has been an important step, because when you podcast, you cannot hide anymore.
Yeah.
Right? The topics are shown. Yeah. Everyone can listen and sometimes also share about myself. So that's why it has been a step-by-step process. Now we're on video, but episode one, there was no video.
So it's beautiful. I love this.
Yeah, it's step-by-step.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I listened to Oprah Winfrey in conversation with Paulo Coelho, and I was like listening, oh, what can I learn from her style in interviewing? One of the questions that she asked that I liked was, what lesson in life took you a long time to learn?
Mm.
You know, maybe you needed a few times to learn it, but what has it been in your case?
Wow. There's a few of them. Saying no to things that just aren't aligned with my truth, my greater purpose, what I want to do. One of the biggest things is just walking in my truth and all the things that relates to, whether that means saying no thank you to certain types of relationships or certain types of work, just making decisions based on the feeling of like, yeah, that feels good, let's go with this, based on like, oh, that's a good idea, that looks like a great opportunity. Most of the time, those are not great decisions. That just ends up being junk mail, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's saying no when it's not really in your part of your mission. And how do you recognize when it's a no?
These days, it's really just, it's like, what's my initial response? My initial response, if something comes in, some kind of opportunity, if my initial response is like, nah, then it's just, that's it. That's a no. Like, I didn't even think. It was just the energy of it was just like, no. Or and then maybe that comes with a scene that I see, like, yeah, I know what this is. This is XYZ. Like, it's not for me. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Now when something comes in and says yes, it's like, ooh, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really your initial response.
Initial response. It's like old cliches are beautiful. I just don't really love them in art. but it's like, it's first impressions are everything. That's an old cliche.
Yeah,
I think we can learn a lot from old cliches.
Yeah. The first impression is important, right?
Yeah.
And so one is about saying no when things are not part of your truth, but you said there's a few lessons that took you a long time to learn. So what is another one?
So believing in others more than they believe in themselves, believing in others, seeing others' possibility. I'll relate this to like being a producer and looking at someone who's calling themselves an artist, right? They want to do all these things in the industry, and they have great talent. And I'm looking at them going, "Ooh, they got it. Like it's incredible." But then they have a lot of things that they need to overcome themselves, because you got to be a full package. You got to be able to, you know, do all the other stuff. You can't just write a song and then just go to sleep. Like it just doesn't really work that way. You have to be up and available to do whatever it takes until you have people working with you that may take over some of those roles. But even then, you're the commander of the ship.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of situations where I put time, I put finances, put stock in people who I believed in more than they believe in themselves, because I believed in their possibility. I stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And I learned those lessons.
Yeah. So it's really important that they really believe.
Yeah. So now I look and I take a good look and I go with the truth of like, they got to work on this. They got to work on that. Let's let that simmer. Let's see where that goes first.
Pass it on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, these are important insights. So saying no to things that are not in your truth and only believe in people if they also believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And if you look at your, it's a bit different topic, but your childhood or the family you come from, can you share a little bit about that, how it has influenced you, maybe some insights for the listener?
Wow. Okay. Sure. Well, my father is an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot of entrepreneurial things from him. I'm still under training. He's the king. So,
Was he an entrepreneur in music or some other field?
Not in music, no. In different types of industry. He had a trucking business. They would transport. He was involved in metals to build trucks, to build things.
Mm-hmm.
Industrial. But he always built his own businesses, ground up. And I remember the last one he built, it was just a desk from 1978, probably a rotary phone in some rundown building, and a notepad and a fucking pen. And probably about 15 years later, it was 40, 50 people working for him, owned the building, everything decked out, done out, and then sold it.
Wow.
Said, damn. You did it from a notepad and a fucking pen.
He started with nothing.
Nothing. Zero. Less than nothing. And that's inspiring. And so I learned that.
My mom. He's still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And so before we go to your mom, so he's still your teacher? You said he's still the king.
Yeah.
So what did you learn from him in terms of entrepreneurship?
How long is the podcast?
I don't know.
Man, everything. Patience. You know, he's very intuitive, and he goes from his feeling, goes from the gut all the time. So watching that and refining my skill set of that, when something's like, I don't think so. It's a no. Don't do it. Just sit and wait for the next right thing. But always patience, always planning. His thing. We always get in arguments about this. What if he's a business person. So he looks at everything from all angles, the negatives, the positives, and he's not afraid to talk about it. But I've always been like, no, don't say the negative stuff. You're saying, no, don't do it. Just going to speak it positively into existence, which, you know, I think is great. But he's right. You have to look at you have to look at the positive and negatives of everything. Every situation is going to have them. And then if you have more positives, then you can make the right decision.
Yeah.
And just patience. Always patience. He's playing chess.
Yeah. So patience and assessing upside and the downside. I like this part because sometimes people think that entrepreneurs are risk takers, but often it's not true. They risk assessors.
Yeah.
Right?
They
assess the risk.
I'm a big risk taker. He's a calculated risk take.
So he assesses the downsides also.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Okay, so that's your dad, and then your mom?
She was a teacher, and she's a very caring person. She's a Cancer sign. She's very loving. She's like, I actually wish to have a little more insight about her teaching career, like just to see her in that action.
Yeah,
because I haven't seen her in that action. My mom's just she's very kind. She's very intelligent, like book smart, and she's just like levitating. She's like floating. She's having a great time.
And what's her teaching about?
She was teaching third and fourth grade special education.
A third and fourth grade. That's primary school or secondary school?
Primary.
So young.
Young. Yeah. And it was interesting. And kids had special needs. So they were so autistic children and whatever types of spectrum they may have been on.
Yeah.
Which actually is quite interesting. And it takes a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And you really got to be. So she's very joyful, bubbly. She's a caretaker naturally at heart. Mm. So I guess it makes a lot of sense. She's probably hard to frustrate, I think. You know, that could be could potentially be a frustrating job, you know, and I could see her just really having extreme patience and just loving these children.
Mm.
And that's what they need.
Yeah. So in a way, because if I look at your current app, it also mixes entrepreneurship and teaching, you could say.
Yeah.
Because the music teaches people to be in certain moods. Of course. Sense, right?
Absolutely.
So it's a bit of a blast.
Yeah.
And, And they live in the U.S.?
Yeah.
They live in the U.S., yeah. And you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have one of each.
One of each.
Yeah.
Are they also in similar fields or you guys took different directions?
Way different. Yeah. My sister, she's in orthodontics.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother is, he's a contractor.
Ah.
Builds things.
Yeah.
Super good at that. Incredible.
Yeah.
And I think he's really a great artist too. Yeah.
I like it when people do different things. So my brother is into music. He's a little bit like you. So he's also into sound engineering. He plays piano. Mm. Then my sister is more into nature, environment. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'm a bit more in, I don't know, entrepreneurship, podcasting. But it's nice when you can inspire each other a little bit, right? With different worldviews.
Yeah.
And I was looking at Spotify before this session on your name, and then I found you've been on a Bruce Springsteen podcast.
Oh,
right?
Oh yeah. Did he put that out?
He put it out.
Oh, cool.
It's a podcast for Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
Fans, what's your thing with Bruce Springsteen? How did you end up in a podcast?
I met this guy. I was sending emails out to businesses for my app, and. Okay. This guy's lovely, and he was working at this other company in customer support. I think it was like head of customer support or something. Mm. And I was looking to talk with them about somehow to integrate my music and the app within their customer support team for the employees and for like a customer experience. People are on hold, right? They're calling with issues. How can we play them calming music to help? You know, further the customer and the employee relationship. So him being a music fan, he's like, well, this is really cool. And like, we can't use it at the company, but do you want to be on my podcast? And I was like, yeah, of course, man. That sounds really cool. So his podcast is really aimed at, it's like Bruce Springsteen stories and fans of that. But yeah, he had me on and we talked all about music and art and frequency and all that. And then he asked me some Bruce Springsteen things at the end, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it's cool that the podcasters choose like specific topics, right?
Yeah.
Recently, I was at a festival with someone, and she told me that thinking will be the next wave of consciousness, that we're become more aware that thinking can also be polluting.
Mm.
But that's her view. But what's your view on thinking?
I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in it?
No. I believe we're just...
Tell me more.
Beacons. We're just antenna walking around, receiving signal of what is.
So you don't believe in thinking, but do you... So don't you believe in the value of thinking, or don't you believe thinking exists?
I don't believe it exists. I believe in reflecting.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in reflecting.
Yeah. So when I think about, so for instance, now I'm thinking after this podcast, you will make video reels, for instance, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about that. But is that then thought, or is that reflection, or what's that? How do you
feel that? Like it's you receiving the downloads of what to do.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm receiving a download of what to do next.
Yeah.
And if you say I don't believe in thinking, which I think is an interesting statement, like what do you hope to achieve with that? Or what's kind of the value of that message to a listener? Like what can a listener do with it?
Okay, what can they do with it? Really look at what comes into your consciousness.
Hmm.
And don't always push away something. That's probably another lesson for me. I have a habit of certain thoughts,
mm-hmm.
but information coming in, and I'm like, geez, that's so negative, or this is, why would you think that about, or why would you, but I started to realize, no, this is information. Now, of course, it's not always true by any means, but there's a lot that is.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be getting a download, an intuition, an insight about a person, about a situation,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you pay attention to those subtleties, you have the information you need to make good decisions for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's subtleties. What are the subtleties?
Well, I believe that there's so much information coming through, and it could be fleeting.
Mm-mm.
I mean, we're all receiving this information. You might see a scene in your head about a person, a situation, a business endeavor, whatever, and you're like, that's weird. Like, maybe it was weird, mm-hmm. you know, or we could label it as weird, or maybe it was a little bit negative or something, right? You're like, oh, I don't think John would do that, you know, right? And then, don't sit with it for a second.
Yeah.
Maybe John would do that.
Yeah.
Then maybe you need to move in a certain way, so to navigate that, or maybe you just need to reflect on that and understand that. So there's a lot of information coming through that's fleeting,
mm-hmm.
and it's just to have awareness.
Yeah, to have awareness, and then it comes to you, and then you can decide what to do with it.
Totally. Yeah. Don't turn a blind eye to it.
No.
Just observe and file it.
Yeah. And if you look about thinking and creativity and insight, you remind me, like recently I was at an Airbnb somewhere, and then there was a book of Rick Rubin, who is, I think, a famous music producer.
Yes.
Right? And I think he wrote a book about the art of being,
mm-hmm.
which is not necessarily about the practicalities of his career. It's not like I've done ABC, but it's more takes a meta perspective on creativity and insight. Have you read that book?
Any chance? I've listened to some of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've listened to some of it. And has he inspired you in any way?
Yeah, Rick Rubin, super, super cool and very inspiring.
Mm.
From being an entrepreneur, a deep reflector, deep meditator. I feel like he's totally brilliant. Be an interesting guy to converse with, and I see part of myself with some of those attributes to play some of those roles, in art.
Yeah.
Helping other artists actualize their creations and actualizing my own creations. So I think he's brilliant.
So you have some overlapping interests, so to say.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I totally agree with most of everything that I've read or listened to of his.
I want to buy his book. So when I was at the Airbnb, I asked the owner whether I could buy the book from her, but it was apparently from her ex-boyfriend, so she didn't want to sell it.
Oh, yeah.
So I have to find it.
Amazon.
Yeah, I think so.
Or whatever.
And we're getting to the end. So I'm always asking people what their recipe for life is.
Yeah.
Because you've been around for a few decades. Like, how would you, you know, summarize your recipe for life?
Recipe for life. Truth. Joy. Excitement. Passion. Art.
Beautiful. That's it.
That's it.
Very succinct.
Just let it simmer.
Thank you very much. I really, truly enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I think that's it. Is there anything else you want to share with the listener?
Love yourself, believe in yourself, and whatever is in the back of your head and kicking around in your heart and your soul, just go fucking do it. Because the worst thing that could happen is nothing. That's the worst thing that can happen. Yeah. The best thing that can happen is something.
Wow.
Just fucking do it.
Just go for it. Well, thank you. That's a brilliant piece of advice. Thank you, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.